Chapter 20, Home. New email from Chip Collins to everyone. Date, February 29, 2020. Subject, home. What the actual fuck? It's Fred's voice. I can hear Fred's voice. If I'm dead, that means Fred is the guy who greets you in heaven. I mean, stranger shit could happen, but Fred? I open one eye. Fred's standing over me, wagging his finger like a pissed-off middle school chemistry teacher. Get up. Now. Okay, I'm not dead. Check. I bring my fingers to my eyes and wiggle them around. No wrinkles, no arthritis. Check. I sit up, and don't puke for once. Check. Look, mister, you're in big trouble. I look up at him, wanting to say, do you have any idea how much trouble we just got you the fuck out of? But I still don't have the energy. I climb to my feet, awkwardly. These 30-something-year-old legs are going to need some getting used to. Fred, what year is it? His face goes white. Oh, Christ, how bad was it? Don't even tell me. Just tell me what the hell that is. He turns me around a full 180, so I'm facing the star closet. Its door is open, but the door behind it, the interdimensional transfer apparatus, is gone. Gone. Like it never existed. Just a wall. I don't know why, but the only thing I can manage to say is, Nicola is dead. And Pete finds my shoulders and puts his arms around me, and we both cry, like the ugliest crying you've ever seen, for our dear, dear lost friend. Fred, for once at a loss for words or a reprimand, joins us. After a long time of this, one of the shrug team takes my hand and shakes it. It was an honor, sir. And he peels off his clean suit, and the rest of them follow his lead, and they walk out, and we all know without a shadow of a doubt that the show's over. The ITA and Nikola Tesla, in a way they were one and the same, weren't they? Are gone. A little hand tugs at my pants leg. Gigi! Go see old man! Go see old man! I pull her up and hug her tight. No, honey, we can't see old man. He's... And I bury my face in her neck and cry my eyes out all over again. Thank God she's back. My little Gigi is little again. Thank God. Everything's back to normal. But she won't remember any of this, will she? She doesn't even remember that the old man is gone. Fred pats me on the back. We'll debrief in a couple of days. How does that sound? You take your time to process. I'll handle the muckety-mucks up top. So we leave room 3327 of the New Yorker Hotel for the last time, ever, I guess. Unless I have to rent this room when I'm in the doghouse with Julie, although I'm probably in pretty good right now, aren't I? I should probably just stop at the registration desk on my way out and book it permanently. They can rename it the Chip Collins Doghouse Room. By the time the Uber lets us out in front of our apartment, I'm fucking exhausted. Like, can you imagine what it feels like to go from 34 years old to 104 and then back again? Watch your father figure die right in front of your eyes? Say goodbye to your furry alien buddy and just barely escape the void? Yeah, that kind of exhausted. We hump our tired butts up to the second floor, and I immediately plop onto the couch, where I intend to stay for the next 3,000 hours, at least, and Pete joins me. Holy shit, Pete, did that just happen? Yep, it just happened. You want a beer? I can get Gigi to get us a beer. But he knows I'm kidding, and he gets up, complaining about his lower back, and gets us both a cold one. I pop it open and we clink, silently toasting Nicola, and forever, and the wordless mix of infinite things we're feeling. Pete, you're right, by the way. I'm right about a lot of stuff, but what? They're not going to remember any of this, anything. Just then the girls come running out of their bedroom, tears in their eyes, both asking, Bobo? Shit. Pete feels the question with admirable firmness. Girls, Bobo had to go home, just like we came home. He's got a family too, I think. We'll see him again soon, I promise. He's just going to be away for a while. Say bye-bye to Bobo. Bye-bye, they sing together. And just like that, they're off, back to their secret shenanigans. By tomorrow, they'll probably forget Bobo even existed. Just as I'm about to drift off into exhausted plus beer land, I hear the key in the front door and the murmuring of more than two giddy voices in the hall. Me and Pete look around like burglars, like we did, in fact, just create the biggest mess literally of all time. But to look around the apartment, it's like nothing happened. It's actually cleaner than it usually is by this time on Guy's Night In. The girls come stumbling in, Julie and Meg, and oh great, Gina's still with them. And they're hugging and singing some drunken Justin Timberlake song or something. And all three of them plop down on our couch. Hey, honey. Julie plants an exaggerated wet one on my cheek. Anything interesting happen tonight? She hiccups. Wow, babe. Did you guys swallow the mojito factory? Gina laughs and slurs. Oh, you're funny as... I can't. Funny, yeah. Her eyes are all googly. God, these guys really tied one on. She tries to focus. Hey, where's my pal Bobo? They look around with that inebriated, you'll never find your keys even if they're right in front of you look. I lean over and give Gina a quick hug. Hey, Gina, good to see you. Bobo? He went home. Home to be with all the other Bobos. They laugh together, like it's the most hilarious joke they've heard all night. Julie slaps my thigh. You're funny, honey. Did you know you're funny? Bobo, going home. Ha! Hey, was Gigi good? I smile. Yeah, babe, you have no idea. She saved all our lives. She smacks me on the knee. You're so funny. Meg, isn't he funny tonight, Meg? But Meg's on the other side of the couch trying to make out with Pete, right there in front of us. And Pete's gently pushing her away, and within 2 minutes, the three of them are passed out and snoring. So me and Pete quietly get up and sneak into the bedroom where the other girls are playing, and just sit there on the floor and watch them. Hannah picks up a Barbie doll and walks it over to Gigi.
Barb, get married.
Gigi's got a Superman doll, sorry, Ken. And she bends it over to kiss the other doll.
Let's go Paris.
Pete pats me on the back. Well, would you look at that? I'm wrong. Maybe they will remember the good stuff. Gigi notices us now and puts down her Superman and walks over, all serious.
Daddy.
Yes, honey bumpkin. She looks deep into my eyes and scrunches up her face, and I get a feeling like she's going to say something a 30-year-old woman would say or connect directly to my brain. And I realize that inside this little kid is the power of telepathy and the power to heal and the ability to find her way around dimensions without a map. Inside that brain somewhere is the memory of walking on the event horizon of a supermassive black hole at the center of a universe and driving through Paris on Victory Day in 1945, talking to a dinosaur, growing into a woman in a matter of hours. I wonder if she'll remember any of it. What are you thinking, honey? Are you remembering something? She looks at me, really concentrating. Oh, I can feel it, something big. And then,
Gigi, go poop.
Yeah, that's about right. Start the book with a fart joke and end it with a poop joke. I like that. But before I can put my mental pen down and call it a trilogy, Gigi throws her little arms around my neck and giggles.
Daddy love Gigi. Gigi love daddy. Forever.
Wow. Now that's an ending. Dedication. This book is dedicated to William Turbo, grandnephew and last living relative of Nikola Tesla. William died in August of 2018. I had the great fortune to work with William on the first book in this series, Where the Hell is Tesla? I had reached out to him for symbolic permission to use Nikola Tesla's name, but it quickly became more about digging a little deeper into the enigmatic inventor and getting things right. We got to speak and correspond many times over a couple of years. He was a quirky guy, William, but absolutely brilliant, and he didn't mind all the F-bombs from Chip, as long as I didn't mess with Nikola Tesla. In fact, I was struck with how devoted he was to his granduncle, to getting the facts straight, as few facts as there are in these novels, to changing Tesla's dialogue to things he'd actually say, not things I wanted him to say, to the pronunciation of his name. For the record, he said Nikola was correct, or at least acceptable, instead of Nikola, to generally honoring the great man that he was. I hope I've done that in these books, and maybe even inspired a little more interest in Nikola Tesla, one of his century's greatest minds, and possibly the greatest inventor of all time. If you're a real fan of this series, you might remember the many times Tesla bends down and tussles Chip's hair, including the first time they meet in Book 1. That was taken directly from a conversation I had with William, who recounted in vivid detail the memory of, as a wee lad, meeting his granduncle for the first time, the great Nikola Tesla, who bent down and tussled little William's hair with a paternal grin on his face. William told me that little story with such fondness, and it really helped me shape the relationship of Tesla and Chip. William was an engineer and an inventor in his own right, working at NASA and RCA, and he carried the torch for Nikola Tesla for years as executive director of the Tesla Memorial Society. What a great guy. Thank you and goodbye, William. You've finished reading Gigi Make Paradox. Please review this book on Audible, Amazon, or iTunes. One of the best ways for independent authors and small publishers to get exposure for their books is to receive as many honest, thoughtful reviews as possible. Thanks in advance. This has been Gigi Make Paradox, Where the Hell is Tesla? Book 3. Written and narrated by Rob Dirks. Copyright 2019, Rob Dirks. Production copyright 2019, Goldfinch Publishing.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.